That was wrong. Hold on. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Everybody ready? 1, 2, 3. Let's show rules!
It's a little thing to show when they're if you don't like the gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are gonna get bad. But the show is going back to DLFGS.org. NICGenitalPoliticsNet Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Oh boy, welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show. Episode 373 on this wonderful Wednesday, October 27th, 2010. Dan, thank you for that rousing introduction where you knocked your microphone over or whatever it was. Anyway, we have a great show scheduled for you tonight. Let's get right into it. We have our usual suspect of guests, Dan, Pat, Link, myself, Joel, and Dave Yates are on. And we also have Colin Guthrie. Did I get your name right, Colin?
You did indeed, yes.
All right, from the Magia project, is it? Did I get that right?
Well, I think I've heard quite a few different pronunciations of it so far, but that's certainly how I pronounce it as well. So, yeah, I'll say you're
correct. All right. Magia it is then. And that's the new fork or implementation of the old Mandrake/Mandriva Linux distribution, correct?
Indeed, that's correct, yes.
Awesome. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about Magia and why all this forking stuff happened and what we can expect to see?
Sure, no problem. Magia was formed because of in order to give us kind of community-based project driving the distribution that we all kind of love and use to drive that forward. Mandriva itself recently has obviously been suffering financial problems and has, you know, been laying off a lot of workers. It's kind of a sad situation to be in. Obviously, no one particularly likes it when these kind of things happen. But a lot of the engineering team and a lot of people that I've worked with in the past have sadly had to be laid off. And you know, I've always been a kind of long-term contributor to Mandriva, so these are a lot of people that I consider my friends and colleagues. I've met a good few of them in real life at various free software events and social functions, etc. And it's really been a process that we've been trying to do within Mandriva itself for a long time, is to have much more community input. You know, the distro itself and the Cooker community, as it's kind of called, the development distro, is really quite vibrant and had a lot of people putting in a lot of effort into it. And over the years, there's been kind of various people drifting off to different distributions because there's not been that element of community control. So when the sort of layoffs started coming on thick and fast, and there was a lot of people sort of not directly involved in the community but follow it fairly closely, we're obviously getting concerned, seeing all these people sending their goodbye emails, etc. And we all decided essentially to get together and form Magia, which is going to be the, as I say, the community-driven distro that we'll take that. So we'll take that forward. And a lot of the engineering talent and contributors that were previously involved in Mandriva have all signed on board. And we're seeing a lot of goodwill in the community at the moment from that, with a lot of people who were previously Mandriva users are kind of coming back and saying, you know, okay, we'll take another look at this now, because a lot of the reasons that we left are now kind of being addressed by how Magia is forming. So in that sense, it's all looking quite bright and rosy at the moment.
How long have you been with, were you with any of the Mandriva projects or Mandrake prior to the fork of Magia?
Yeah. I mean, I've been a long-term Mandriva contributor for several years now. I've been using the Mandrake as a distribution since back in the, you know, 6 point something or other release days, which is more years than I care to remember. And I've been actively involved in contributing packaging and such like for a good number of years as well. So yeah, definitely been involved for a long time.
So now, does this mean that the current Mandrake is going to go away, or you know, is it like a legitimate fork, and both projects are still going to go, or you guys just sort of hogtied the whole thing, and Magia is going to be the thing from here on out?
Well, I think Mandrake's going to Mandriva. I'm still using the old name. No, Mandriva will still continue. I don't know exactly the ins and outs. I mean, one of the reasons why we wanted a sort of more community driven distribution is because there's not a huge amount of information that kind of comes out from the actual corporate plans of Mandriva. So, you know, even though I'm still involved as a contributor there at the moment, I still don't know exactly what the main plans are and what the direction really is. Certainly they've said that they're going to be hiring people to replace those that have been laid off and such like. It seems a bit bizarre, because why lay off a bunch of people if you're just going to rehire? You know, you're losing a lot of talent, a lot of knowledge there to rehire. But certainly, when Mandriva itself was formed, is obviously a combination of Mandrake and Connectiva. There is actually a significant engineering talent in Brazil. So those guys are still employed by Mandriva at the moment, and I think the plan is to hire some more people over in that neck of the woods to kind of continue driving Mandriva forward. But in terms of the sort of commercial side of things, I've heard that there's going to be Mandriva Enterprise Server 6, which is the next iteration of their Enterprise Server range. Obviously the free and the sort of desktop distributions will carry on as well. More than that, I honestly can't say. I don't really know much what's planned in other regards.
So you don't know for sure if this is going to end up in one of those working relationships, sort of like the Red Hat / Fedora thing?
Well,
or if this
I think
is definitively the fork was because the community really wanted to do something themselves, not that the company, so to speak, is sort of pushing for a fork because they want easy development, right?
Yeah, no, I mean the company wasn't particularly pushing for the fork, that's for sure. The company's always stated that they wanted to have a kind of more community-driven sort of foundation or organization, but it's been mostly rhetoric, and they've been saying that for a number of years. And, you know, you lose confidence. People that are involved in the community and wanting to do stuff like that, they lose confidence when it just doesn't happen and it doesn't materialize. So, you know, we've got to take the bull by the horns at some stage, and that's essentially what we're doing. You know, there's a degree of hope that at some point maybe it can be, you know, some people will believe that it can be the Fedora to the Mandriva's Red Hat. But I don't know. I mean, it's not going to be something that's going to happen immediately. There's still, you know, a little bit of raw emotion there kicking in, and then that'll take a while to kind of dissipate. But so we'll be forming the Magia.org as a kind of French non-profit organization. To be honest with you, the French law, I don't understand everything and all the terminology correctly, but it's effectively a kind of charitable foundation. That will be made up with a board. And at present, there will not be a representation of Mandriva on the board, but after a year, there will be various election processes going underway to select members to the board, and we're open to the potential of having somebody representative of Mandriva at that stage. So, you know, never say never, but certainly until we get things up and running, get a release out and sort of find our feet in with Magia, it will be more of a fork. But we're not ruling out sort of collaboration in various ways. Certainly many of the packagers will probably remain packaging for both distributions, and we're kind of hoping as well, you know, our package management system in Mandriva has been based on Subversion for a long time. It's a very large Subversion repository, and I think as with a lot of projects these days, everyone's kind of migrating towards Git. Everyone much prefers the distributed version control that brings. And I suspect that we'll be doing much the same thing when we've got our infrastructure in place. And as a result, using distributed version control systems like that, it does make collaboration easier. So I would hope that Mandriva would do a similar migration as well, possibly learning from how we approach it. And as such, I would hope to see that happen at some point, but we'll have to wait and see.
Colin, I got a question, or kind of like a comment. Maybe you can give your opinion on this, but when I look back at Mandriva, Mandrake, Magia now, I mean, back when Link and I first started the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group, which was, it was a little before 2000, wasn't it, Link?
Yeah, long time ago.
So like right around that time period, Mandrake was just this like this phenomenal force that a lot of people, especially new users, seem to gravitate towards. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we went to other groups in the area, computer groups, and all they were ever doing was, you know, installing Mandrake, talking about Mandrake, loving Mandrake. There was just an overwhelming love for Mandrake. And then it just all seemed to go away for some reason. I mean, for a long period of time. There was like this gap that formed, and until Ubuntu came along, there was like people played around with simply Mepis and a few other things, but then Ubuntu took that role that Mandrake seemed to have back in the day, and ever since then, I mean, it turned into Mandriva, and now it's going to Magia, or whatever it's pronounced. Where do you, I mean, and since then, I've tried Mandrake a few times, and I've always found it to still be a very solid, very straightforward, easy-to-use distribution with fantastic tools and a decent KDE setup. But it just seems to have never gotten back that popularity that it once had in the distro world. And do you... I mean, what do you think about that? Am I wrong? Maybe in other places it is really popular, or I mean, do you think that with the move to Magia, it's going to regain some of that?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope so. Obviously, I don't necessarily disagree with you. Your statements there, I think it's a valid observation. I mean, I think sort of starting at your first comment, it very much was and still is a distro that really does suit a sort of range of users, from the novice right up to fairly advanced users. One of the sort of shining glories of Mandriva is the control center, which really does kind of centralize all the management of your computer in a kind of nice and friendly GUI environment. Which new users and migrators from Windows or whatever definitely found a very good value-added product within the offering. And there is probably in the sort of period when distros were getting cranked out, sort of 5-6 years ago maybe, there was probably a couple of releases that weren't quite up to scratch. I think that happens with all distros, to be honest with you. And then, you know, along comes somebody with a distribution that has a significant marketing budget, essentially. and they're able to gain significant grounds, and that's really where Ubuntu's done very well. It's they really have built up a community and had the budget to do that that Mandriva just simply never had. It's kind of fighting an unwinnable battle against the kind of funding that goes into that kind of thing. And I think that's a shame, because it kind of, one of the things that you really need in the Linux ecosystem is diversity. You need different distros doing different things. I really respect a lot of the things that Ubuntu have done, technically and you know, from a sort of marketing and publication perspective. But there's a lot of things that I really disagree with how they've approached things as well. I don't think, in my opinion, they've been the best contributor to the open source stack. They've made a product that is good, and they've made what their modifications available, but they've not really participated, in my opinion, with upstream projects in quite the way that I would like to see them do. Certain things such as the desktop notification specification that they relatively recently decided to embrace and extend in a way that's quite reminiscent of certain other software companies that we might have discussed in the past, whereby they've taken certain elements that were in the spec and in use in applications we're using, namely the actions callbacks, and removed them from their implementation and discouraged any application developers from using them. And I think that was a really big backward step, because the desktop notification specification was something that was actually beginning to unify desktops. You were getting KDE and GNOME both implementing the same standard and having applications being able to display passive pop-ups and interactive pop-ups to users in a consistent way. So whether you're using a KDE app on GNOME or a GNOME app on KDE, you were getting an integrated experience. And by removing the action callbacks, you remove a way of interacting with programs, and you end up having to spin your own GUIs to do it, and that makes things look different depending which app you're using, etc., etc. And I think that's a real kind of step backwards. And that's kind of been followed through a little bit with a very recent announcement with Ubuntu wanting to not use the GNOME 3 shell, and instead using their Unity desktop as the sort of primary UI, and basing that on Compass. And I think that's very interesting. I mean, I really like the Compass project, but again, I can't help but feel that they're sort of diverging away from where they could really put focus into an upstream project and give back to everyone else, and they're deciding not to. Partly, I think, because the GNOME shell doesn't really conform to how they wanted their desktop specifications and desktop notifications system going. And they're probably struggling to see how they can integrate that, and that's probably a factor. It's probably not the only factor, but I'm sure that is one. So they are very much diverging away from people in that sense. And what's kind of an interesting one to deal with is that, you know, when you're involved in upstream projects, as I am, you get various people coming in from different distros asking for help and wanting advice, etc. And when distributions start varying their packages significantly from the upstream projects, that becomes very difficult to be able to do. So you get divergence of support, and you're making upstream people's jobs harder, even though they've got kind of no choice. Just people drift in who happen to be users. So, yeah, I think with Magia, what we're wanting to do is be a very good member of the open source community, from the bottom right up to the top. We want to be able to contribute patches back to the upstream projects. We want to make sure the upstream projects are getting the benefit of people using them, and that they remain as true to the upstream project as possible, while still obviously putting our own particular shine on it as well. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully over the sort of, once we get our first release out, we'll be able to see the enthusiasm and the kind of drive that's behind Magia at the moment turn into some more market share, and hopefully encourage more and more users to continue using desktop Linux.
So, Colin, Magia was announced as a fork, what, last month, September?
That's correct, yeah.
How long, I guess, between the first time that forking started being talked about and the time that it was announced, how long did that take? I mean, what, can you give us sort of a timeline of what, if there was one thing or it was accumulation of things that spurred the first talk of Fork, and how long it took?
It was an accumulation of things. You know, the writing has been on the wall with Mandriva and the financial situation for quite a while. So, you know, it's not something that's been going on. You know, it's not something that just came out of the blue. It has been discussed. There's a kind of a fairly tight-knit group of core contributors who are external, like myself, and obviously the people that were in the situation where their jobs were on the line, essentially. I couldn't necessarily say exactly how long that's been discussed for, but I mean, it's, you know, as I say, the financial situation writing was on the wall for a while, so, you know, the discussions have been there for a reasonable amount of time. One of the things that we were obviously concerned about was making the announcement without having a product. Essentially, as things stand at the moment, it is vaporware. You know, you can't escape from the fact that you can't actually download Magia and install it at the moment. We were in a kind of tricky situation there about when to announce it, and you know, we didn't necessarily want to announce it without having anything that people could actually download and use there and then. But by the same token, with all the redundancies and all the goodbye letters that were emails that were getting sent out, there was significant community unrest, and we needed to make sure that we reassured them and you know, said, look, we're committed to taking this forward, and that's what ultimately spurred the announce when it happened, was because it was the right time for the community to know about it. And even though we're sort of still in the process of forming everything, we're still in the process of forming the charitable foundation that will ultimately underpin the project. We've just recently set up the hardware infrastructure that we're going to need to sort of build the distro and get everything going. You know, so it's still going to take some time before we can have something out. We're looking for getting some sort of alpha build towards the end of the year. The timescales for the first official release are still kind of hazy at the moment, and depends on a lot of factors with regards to infrastructure, etc. But we're probably looking for kind of alpha builds towards the end of the year. With a release coming probably a month or two, a couple of months after that.
The charitable foundation will be run by a board, did you say?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm using exactly the right terminology. It's I can get the French Wikipedia link, but it doesn't mean a huge amount to myself. It's going to be run by a board, and there will be elections to elect members off the board. So it'll be a very democratic process, and it will mean that.
I was just wondering if you're going to have like a. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Carry on.
I was just wondering if you're going to have a community manager.
I mean, essentially, there's we're already kind of organizing into various different teams, from, you know, sysadmin team right through to promotions and marketing and all the other kind of necessary components. So yeah, I mean, in terms of people managing the community, etc. There's a place where people can come along board and register what kind of areas that they want to help out in. There'll certainly be scope for people helping to build the community and keep the liaisons going. There's already quite a strong German community and Spanish community, and various other nationalities as well. Certainly there will be a significant focus on the community.
So when do you foresee a significant release coming out of the Magia project?
I reckon, being realistic about it, as I say, we're looking for alpha towards the end of the year, and probably an actual RC coming out a couple of months after that, I would think. I would be kind of hoping, I guess, for the kind of February kind of timescales, but there's so many things that are kind of up in the air just now that it's kind of hard to nail it down. Once our sort of build infrastructure is going and we're actually got that in place, things will start to kind of pick up significantly from there. But until that's in place, it's kind of hard to say. The infrastructure itself was only installed this weekend past, so it's still early days. It's still getting configured and locked down and secured and all the necessary systems set up for that. So it's just about ready now for kind of getting that kind of infrastructure going. But I think in ask the same question in a few weeks' time, we'll probably have a better idea of timescales. I'm also not necessarily the best person to ask for that as well, as I'm not particularly involved in the release planning stages. So these kind of timescales are probably my best guesses, but other people might actually have a slightly more realistic and more nailed down version of that.
So you guys are really going for a noticeable difference then between Magia and Mandriva, other than, you know, for your first release, other than like a rebranding and then working from there, right? I mean, obviously, if it's taken you guys some number of months to come up with this, you have plans on making some noticeable changes other than rebranding, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, essentially, what's going to happen, we kind of toyed around with the idea of doing a quick release, which would essentially just be Mandriva painted in a different color. But we decided against that ultimately. It wouldn't really be indicative of any significant engineering kind of project, really. What will happen is that essentially we will be releasing our first distribution based off the development sources of Mandriva, and we'll be sort of polishing that up ourselves into the final product stage. We'll be pushing out the latest KDE and I suspect probably the latest GNOME version in some form. I don't know if the GNOME version will be the default one, the GNOME 3, or whether the default will be GNOME 2 still. I honestly don't know which is going to be the default one, but both will be supported. Obviously the latest KDE 4 version as well. Mandriva is obviously known for being one of the top KDE distributions, we certainly want to carry that through with Magia.
Connectiva, but that was a Brazilian distribution, right?
That's correct, yeah, and there's still a lot of guys, good guys over in Brazil working on that in Mandriva today, and those are the guys that kind of escaped the worst of the layoffs, most of the layoffs coming in, partly due to a technicality. Although it was called Mandriva, there was technically another company involved called Edge IT. It was kind of a remnant of a acquisition at some point. I don't know the gory details, if I'm honest. And I don't think anyone really who was working for Mandriva really gave it much thought about the fact that there was two companies there. A lot of the people that were technically working for Mandriva were really on paper actually working for Edge IT. And it's basically all the Edge IT staff that have been laid off, which was the sort of primary kind of French engineering managers, engineering team there. So that's what saw this kind of brunt of the layoffs. There has obviously over the years been a little bit of layoffs in that sense as well. There was a policy that came back. Struggling to remember how long ago it was now, but it was probably about a year and a half ago. Basically, any remote contractors were laid off, or their contracts weren't renewed, and that meant that we lost quite a lot of good people. Guys like Adam Williamson, for example, who was kind of the community manager from Andreev at the time, and in my opinion did a very good job at publicising and kind of driving Mandriva in that stage, and he's gone on to do, as far as I'm aware, great things at Fedora now, at Red Hat. So,
yeah, what was his name? He was over the forums for years, wasn't he?
Adam Williamson.
Yeah. I remember when that happened.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Magia? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, carry on, it's okay.
I was just wondering if Magia is more French now than Mandrake was, I guess, before the fork. I mean, it being Brazilian and French or based in both places, is Magia less Brazilian now out of the gate or not?
It's probably fair to say it's less Brazilian now, but that's kind of just a product of how the kind of financial situation and the job structure worked out in Mandriva. It could easily have been worked out differently. But it remains to be seen. The community and the people involved in Magia are certainly worldwide. It's it will be based in France just for the significant kind of. A lot of the core kind of contributors are going to be based there, but certainly in terms of the people that are on the founding board are the founders of Magia are you know, it's an international effort. There's myself, obviously not French, and various people from all over the world, in Scandinavia and in France and Germany and all over. So it's certainly not something that's French through and through. There's a lot of French influence, and there's a lot of really good French people involved. But like I say, it's very much an international effort, and just from the kind of the translations that are on the initial announcement, and then come on board and that there's a lot of interest from various locales.
So I have a little different question for you, or maybe just a statement. I see, according to the website, the Magia website, that you are the guy who is single-handedly responsible for the momentous task of making Pulse Audio work for everybody in the world.
I'm one of the people. I've done, I've been involved in the Pulse Audio project for quite a while now, and, it's, as I'm sure everyone will have appreciated, it's not been the easiest of roads to travel down at times. It's been interesting times. There's been a lot of propaganda spread about Pulse Audio that really wasn't fair. You've got to kind of push these projects out there in order to get them, get all the various problems ironed out. There's only so much you can do in a clean room implementation. The kind of some of the problems that we've encountered in the past with Pulse Audio have been really pushing the ALSA infrastructure forward. When Pulse Audio, I can't remember what version now, I think it was 0.12, debuted, it defaulted to timer-based audio scheduling, and that was a massive change. This is something that a lot of the kind of people that are involved in mobile development are interested in, the Nokias and Intels of the world. They're very much focusing on that kind of model, because it allows you to push a lot of data into the hardware. You're talking kind of buffer sizes of 2 seconds. And disabling interrupts completely, so that rather than waking up the processor multiple times a second, you're sleeping for, almost 2 seconds before you have to actually wake up and do anything again, and that obviously has a significant effect on battery life, if you can tell the CPU to sleep and not do anything, and so that way of driving the audio hardware. Basically meant that Pulse Audio was the only ALSA client that actually made use of that capability. And because of that, that exposed a lot of bugs and problems in the actual ALSA drivers themselves. And when people used Pulse Audio and found it didn't work for them, they said, oh, but it works with Alpha, therefore it's a Pulse Audio problem. Now really, Pulse Audio was the only advanced Alpha client that was really exposing the problem. So to say it's Pulse Audio's fault was a bit unfair under those circumstances. There's a lot of cases when Pulse Audio did have bugs, of course, as well, and they've obviously been ironed out as well over the years. So, you know, that's one of the kind of main areas where for Pulse Audio got a poor representation. The second area is integration with desktops, particularly in the KDE desktop, where integrating cleanly into the configuration system there just was a bit of a mess for a number of years. And that's something that I eventually got kind of pissed off enough about that I just decided to fix it. And that's what I've been doing for the kind of my Pulse Audio work over the last year or so, has been really pushing that through. Mandriva was actually one of the first distributions to default to Pulse Audio for all desktops, and I went to significant lengths to make sure that users couldn't misconfigure Pulse Audio within KDE to the extent of essentially crippling the UI and KDE provided to make sure that they couldn't get it wrong. Users could still disable Pulse Audio if they wanted, but by the same token, if they opted for it, they couldn't really get the configuration wrong, and that was important. And a lot of the other distros kind of missed that trick and ended up with a lot of people essentially being able to create configurations that were just ultimately going to break at some point. It was almost a guarantee. But I'm very pleased to say now that with the sort of full integration of Pulse Audio into KDE, that now all the kind of major KDE distributions are now defaulting to Pulse Audio with that work involved. Kubuntu, which was released recently, is defaulting to Pulse Audio, and I was at the OpenSUSE developer conference just this weekend, and their KDE environment is going to be defaulting to Pulse Audio as well. And Red Hat, of course, have already defaulted to Pulse Audio under their KDE packages as well. So we're kind of pretty much notching up all the distros now in that regard.
Whose question was that? Say thank you.
That was my question. Thank you.
All right.
We're going to rename it to Colin Audio now, right? Since you single-handedly have fixed it.
No, I mean, my contributions are still quite high level. Oh, dear.
What was that?
My contributions are... I don't
know. No licking the microphone now.
Holy mackerel. Joel, turn yourself down. Sorry, Colin.
That's okay. I'm just saying that my contributions to Pulse Audio are still very high level. I'm mostly kind of concerned with configuration, how streams are routed, integration into desktop environments and such like. The actual really clever number crunching kind of stuff that goes on in the core is still a few other guys, Leonard and... There's a couple of really talented guys in the community that are working in and around Pulse Audio, Tanya Christensen, and, to name one, and Aaron and Wim and Pierre, and all these guys are contributing great patches to Pulse Audio and still doing that just now. So it's there's still more features going on. There's still a long way to go with Pulse Audio, but we're getting closer and closer all the time.
How large is the Magia development team right now? And are you... I suspect it's scattered throughout the world.
Absolutely, yeah. It's kind of a disparate team. I mean, the timing's probably a bad opportunity, but if we take a kind of look at the IRC channel, we usually kick around the kind of 60 developers on the developer channel kind of area, and you can kind of see the on the release announcement there's a. The Magia.org, there's the list of people that are coming on board, which is a fairly significant number of sort of core people that said they're going to support there. And there's various people as well that are beyond that list too. So there's a significant number of people there. So it should be good numbers when we get things kicked off.
So you guys plan on having some kind of Mandrake Summit in the next year, where you would all get together, or Magia Summit, I should say. Sorry.
I don't know what the plans are for kind of getting together. I certainly would hope that we'd be able to organize that. It's something that I would value being part of. I've been to kind of a few of the meetings in the past, and sort of been to a few conferences where been able to engage with colleagues, and it really does make a huge difference just to meet up and you know, round table discussions. I don't know the plans for that myself, but I would certainly support that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, here's an interesting question for you. As a developer, and it's such a multicultural project, I guess, how much of a barrier or what do you find is, how much of a barrier is it really, the language barrier and things like that, working with different people from different countries? You know, like here in the United States, we just take it for granted that everybody speaks English. And,
English
just is not
still
the
international language. Yeah, no, I mean, English is still the international language of developers. For example, the Open Source Developer Summit that was at just this weekend past, the, obviously German company, pretty much it's all conducted in English, basically because that is the de facto international language. For myself, I find that an excellent choice. I appreciate that for many people it's quite difficult to learn a second language. But most of the time, I don't have a problem with language barriers with anyone else. And there's usually people that they can discuss things with their peers in their own language, if they want. You know, there's various local IRC channels that we've got, so we're not saying, right, you must speak English and only English when talking about Magia. That's just the obviously ludicrous ground rules to put down. So there, you know, everyone's got their local community, and they can discuss things and sort of operate in sort of smaller subgroups, and those with good language skills, good English skills, can essentially be the kind of spokesperson for that side of things. And there's certainly enough people that are willing and able to do that. And I think it's one of the beautiful things about working in open source is the divergent cultures that cross you when you're involved in these kind of things. There was at a meal the other night, or one of my colleagues was at a meal the other night, and of the 11 people that were around the table eating, they represented 10 different countries, and I think that's the kind of shining example of how, you know, a common goal just completely breaks down all kind of social and political and race barriers. We're all there for the same reason, and you've all got a kind of common goal and a common purpose and a common topic to discuss and to take forward. And I think that's something that for international relations between all kinds of countries, it's a very nice thing to see.
Is it safe to assume that because Magia is going to be non-profit, there won't be any kind of subscription service or Magia Club or anything like that? It's one of the things I remember.
Absolutely. I'm not 100% sure about whether there would be a club version. I don't think so at the moment. But the Magia organization itself will be non-profit. And the idea at the moment is that it won't essentially pay salaries, etc. There might be funds available through donation drives and various other fundraising efforts to help fund the community parts of it, whether it's developer summits and sort of marketing side of things. So there will be finances obviously involved for that, but we'd certainly hope to encourage kind of corporate structures to be built around Magia for OEM deals and various things like that, and hopefully find that these corporations will ultimately sponsor Magia in some capacity, either financially for contributions towards the summits, etc., or by essentially employing developers to work on Magia. So that's the kind of sort of infrastructure that we're kind of looking at just now.
You satisfied, Dave Yates?
Most certainly.
All right. Just send your money right to Colin.
I think that was exactly the wrong thing to do.
Oh.
But in actual fact, the donations have gone through one of the I actually am going to embarrass myself by forgetting exactly who it is now. But the kind of I think it's one of the Mandrake user groups that have helped us. They've already had a kind of foundation already in place. It takes about kind of 4 to 5. I think it's going to take another 2. I think the timescales are another 2 weeks. I think we're kind of halfway, just over the halfway mark of the process of officially forming the organisation, the charitable foundation, and kind of thing. And until that's fully in place, we can't actually use our own bank account to receive donations. So it's going through one of our kind of friendly colleagues in the community, as it were, who've made an open statement about how the donations are handled, and that's working out fine so far. In probably a couple of weeks' time, the sort of full financial situation will be, the infrastructure will be in place, and as such, donations and any other kind of things that you do happen to send towards us will be very much gratefully received directly to us. But if anyone's wanting to send us money before that, that still can go through our colleagues. All the information about that can be found on the website. So, feel free.
Did I have that? Did I lose everybody?
Question there, did I?
Oh, did I have it on mute? Yeah. I'm sorry.
I think you did.
I'm thinking, all right. My question was, are you going to continue with the Mandriva branding and logos and stuff, or are you going to be generating your own soon?
Oh, that's definitely very much underway. There will be a significant and distinct look and feel that will be Magia, that will be separate from Mandriva. Obviously, there'll be copyright will remain for a lot of the stuff, and the name Mandriva will still appear in copyrights in various places. But the primary branding and look and feel will very much be our own. If anyone's interested in contributing towards logos or the kind of themes, etc., then there's a team that's been formed already to sort of deal with that. I believe there's a Flickr group for logo suggestions and stuff like that. So I think there'll probably be a blog post that's coming out about that in the next couple of days about opening up for contributions. So if there's any budding graphic artists out there that want to leave their stamp in the Linux world, then by all means, please come along and let us see what you can produce.
Cool. I look forward to seeing it when it comes on. What? Out.
Sorry, where did the name come from?
Ah, the name indeed. It was various long discussions, and we've come up with various suggestions along the way. There was a big wiki page where we kind of collected as many ideas as we could. A lot of it, sadly, in this day and age, comes down to what domain names are available. So you've got to go for something that's a little bit different or not quite what's been heard before. And essentially, there is one of the reasons that Mandrake changed its name was a legal dispute. Over the Mandrake the Magician. And obviously one of the logos that was prevalent in Mandriva was a kind of magic wand and little tux dressed up in a wizard's outfit, etc. So, you know, that whole kind of theme ran through Mandrake and Mandriva. And it's a little bit of a homage to that, I guess, in the sense that Magia is a kind of a derivation of the word magic. It's, I believe it's in Greek, I believe that is the word for magic. You know, so it's a kind of nice nod in that general direction. Essentially, the name came from these brainstorming sessions and the rejection of everything else that was significantly silly and potentially trademarked or potentially offensive or whatever. So once you distill all those kind of things, we're left with a few kind of options, and Magia was the one that we all decided was the best.
Wow, we're getting those killer awkward silences.
Dan's muted again.
Probably. He's probably still talking, figuring out why we're trying to figure out why we're talking.
No, I was not. I didn't have anything to add to that. I was waiting for you to say something.
I did. I just said something. Something.
All right.
Actually, we are past the halfway point of our show at this point anyway. And what we normally do, Colin, is we take a little musical interlude and break. We wander off into some other topics. But before we do that, I want to thank you profusely for agreeing to come on the show and speak with us.
Okay.
What the hell is that?
I don't know. Somebody's like clicking like crazy.
But I wanted to thank you for agreeing to come on the show and to talk with us about Magia, and invite you to stick around if you'd like on the show and participate in the rest of the show, and also see if we could convince you to come on the show at some later date to give us an update.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure how long I'll be able to stick around tonight because it's now hitting 2:30 a.m. So many people, I have to get up in the morning for my day job. So I might not be able to stick around too much longer. But I'll absolutely come back and give you an update again at some point in the future. Yeah.
We really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule and staying up so late. We thank you very much. I look forward to what the Magia project has coming down the pipe. I apologize for that. I don't know whose card is causing feedback, but that's anyway. I look forward to seeing, because I've always considered Mandriva, Mandrake, a pretty good distribution. I like the balance that it had, and it was very accessible. And I can't wait to see what you guys do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all of us have been very proud of, especially the last couple of releases of Mandriva. All the technical press has given it, you know, very good reviews. You know, the DistroWatch ones and a lot of the kind of people really sort of getting down to the nitty-gritty of distro reviews, it's always come up at, you know, kind of top of the pile. So we've been very happy with that, and I think all of us that are involved really want to drive that forward and continue making a really solid distribution that we can all be proud of. So you're more than welcome for you know, asking me, well, I'd like to thank you for asking me on, should I say, and my time, you're more than welcome.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we thank you very much again, Colin. We know it's quite an imposition to get somebody to stay up until, you know, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, especially just to talk to us, so we appreciate it.
Well, I think I'll bid you goodbye for the time being, and I shall be sure to listen to the second half at a more sociable hour.
All right, thank you very much, Colin.
Thank you.
Okay, cheers with that, guys. Bye-bye.
Oh, man, what the heck was that? Audio going on like crazy. I would have to do some post-production.
Cables again.
Nah, that wasn't from over here. I think it was Joel's new tablet. Alright, I got a song for tonight. Fitting. Because we just spoke to somebody from Mandriva. Mejia, which is a fork of Mandriva. So it only seems right that we play a song by John O'Bacon's band, Severed Fifth, Nightmares by Design album, Fight Philosophy.
Yeah.
It's the song. We're going to play it. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back when this song is over. I don't know how long it is, but get ready. You ready, Alan?
Play it.
All right. Okay. Damn it. Why did it do that? Okay, here we go. Ready? You guys ready? I didn't hear you say ready, hey. Alan. Here ready. We go.
Ready, Alan.
Let's go.
Try again, Dan.
Here's what happened. It disconnected. Okay. Here we go. Damn it. This is just utter failure tonight.
We're
oh, that's
ready.
Why. Here we go. All right. Okay, here we go. Fight philosophy.
Hello world, this is Slick Zero, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Hacker Public Radio. You've listened to it enough, I'm sure, you love the shows, but what makes it different from other podcasts? It's produced by the community. That's right, people just like you. There's no restrictions on how long the show could be, nor on the topic it could cover, as long as they are of interest to hackers. It's so easy to contribute to. Just go to hackerpublicradio.org and click on Contribute. All the information you need is right there.
Wow, that ended abruptly.
Wow.
That was the Hacker Public Radio promotion.
Wow.
Speaking of Hacker Public Radio, I see that Kent Fallon is really pushing the fact that they need contributors to that. And, you see him on Twitter and Identica. He's out there pushing it. He's also showing up on other shows and talking about it. And, you know, we need more people. So if you want to contribute, definitely do so.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I talked to him today. They are looking for more people. Definitely, because they want to keep the ball rolling. And if you have anything at all, doesn't have to be necessarily technology. Who's cutting out? That's not you, Link, is it?
Not me.
No,
is
no.
It Joel?
I'm good, man.
Where's Man Fry?
Well, I think we have a winner.
Man, I am Joel on cell phone, isn't me?
No, it's not you.
Yeah, what's up?
Oh, it's not Manfry. It's got to be Joel then, or Alan. Where are you?
I'm sitting at home here.
All right, so it's got to be Joel. It has to be.
I haven't really said anything.
We found the culprit, I think.
So ding, ding, ding.
Well, Joel, it must be his tap. Poor Joel. It must be his tablet. But yeah, they're. Hold on, let's see. Is it still going on?
What's still going
now
on?
Now it's gone, right? Yeah, it was Joel. Okay. Watch out. Look out! School's out. Hacker Public Radio. Anything you want to talk about? Anything that tickles your fancy, put it on audio and send it right to them, and they'll play it.
You should do something.
I should what?
You should do something for Hacker Public Radio.
I know I should, Dave. So should you.
I know I should.
I think we should do something should. For the Linux Link Tech Show. What do you think?
What are we going to do?
We'll do something for the Linux Link Tech Show. We'll all get together like once a week, maybe on a Wednesday around 8:30, and we'll talk about stuff.
With piss poor audio.
When we're done, we can just when we're done, we can just send them the MP3 file to Hacker Public Radio, and they can play it there.
Yeah, there you go.
Done that for other shows. It could work.
I don't like that. That's terrible when they do that.
Yeah, I don't like recycled shows, man. That doesn't work.
Speaking of recycled crap, Link, tell us all about it, man.
What recycled crap do I have?
Tell us all about the magic of what you bought this week and give us your feedback on it.
Oh, well, in between this week and last week. Last week I was talking at the very end of the show about I was kind of on the fence as to whether I wanted to get a Kindle or a Nook or an iPad or wait for some wonderful new Android tablet that's vaporware to come out and get that. And what happened was, right after that show, pretty much, I had to run to Best Buy to pick up a movie for my wife. And wouldn't you know what they had sitting right there? Not only did they have the Nook, which they've had there for a long time, they also had the Kindle. So I actually got to, you know, do a thorough testing and lay hands on both devices and check them all out. And it turns out that I ended up purchasing a Kindle for, you know, a variety of reasons. I just I kind of liked it a little bit better aesthetically. I thought the page turns were slightly faster, or noticeably faster in my case, but, you know, I'm really picky. I kind of like the little keyboard giblet that it has on there, so you can, you know, you take your little notes and stuff like that, and it was slightly cheaper, even. And I've been a fan, you know, I've been a longtime fan of Amazon for a long time, so you know, a little brand name recognition never hurts, right? Anyway, I picked it up, and I have to say that other than a couple of little picayune things that I probably would love to ask Joel about if he was on, I really dig it. It's really a nice e-book reader. I have no problems using it under Linux whatsoever. You know, mounts up as a USB device. You drag your books in there. PDF files, it reads without a problem. Other than that, I use Mobi. The Mobi format, it reads really well. So kind of, you know, convert your stuff to Mobi and stuff it in there. If you get some EPUB books or something like that, come in the Mobi and stick them right in there. And OptiPop and everything works, and it's pretty neat, you know. I really, really dig it. It's encouraged me to read considerably more in the time I've had it, which is, you know, that's always a good thing, right?
What were the issues you were having with it, though, Link?
Well, the picayune thing that I have with it, and I wanted to ask another Kindle user. Occasionally,
I got one.
Occasionally, when I'm turning the page, the page is like blank. You know, and if I hit the menu key a couple of times, that'll refresh it, and the stuff will pop back up. The text, the ink will pop up. But occasionally, you turn it just right, and the page is blank.
And it's not just a like a logical page break that they would have, you know, transferred into the Mobi file.
No. This would be like a regular page full of text. Only it just doesn't display. The e-ink doesn't display. But if you tap the menu key a couple of times, if you hit the menu key, uh-huh, the menu will pop right back up. If you hit it again, it refreshes to take the menu away, and then all the text is there.
Interesting. Are you seeing this? Not draw the text for me.
Are you seeing this across
Kindle do you have?
Multiple books?
Yes.
I have the Kindle 2.
I have the Kindle 3.
Is it a book that you bought from Amazon, their own store, or is it one that you've downloaded, say, like O'Reilly or something like that?
Anything. Could be anything.
Really?
I was going to say, because I have seen that on occasion on the Droid version of the Kindle, and it turned out to be more with the actual book it was reading. The file it was reading was problematic at times, and it just caused weird formatting issues.
Yeah, I believe it to be independent of what book I'm reading. But I will definitely check, you know, I'll give it some thought and check the next time I'm reading through there to see if I can make it do it on both formats, on something that I actually downloaded from Amazon and you know, something that I stuffed a Mobi file on there or something like that. But that's really it. Like, that's the only thing that I have noticed. And that really is not a showbreaker issue for me, you know what I mean? This is something that only happens very, very occasionally. And, you know, and that's only if I'm flipping fast, right? If I'm flipping pages fast, hardly ever does it happen if I'm just going at, like, reading speed, you know, page by page. it just does its thing, and everything's wonderful. And the text just looks awesome on these things, really.
Yeah, it does. It looks. I mean, I even see it on when I put it on the Android, version of it as well. It does. It looks. It renders very nicely.
What are you using to convert your books?
What the hell is it called? Starts with a C.
Calibre.
Yeah, it's
Calibre.
Yeah, Calibre.
Calibre, whatever.
That's good stuff, man.
Man, I want. I'll tell you what. I know Joel's tablet ain't working. Tablet I have, it does a decent job, but Walgreens just came out with a 7-inch tablet. The Meilong M150 for $99.
Yeah, I'll let someone else try that one this time.
I'm curious because I've seen a lot of reviews about it. People are saying it's pretty good.
Well, anything has got to be better than the one that I bought. That's all I can say. I think chalkboard was better.
I look at this and I'm like, say to myself, do I really want a chance getting another tablet like this? Or do I just want to go with a Kindle or a Nook or something? Because that's primarily what I want it for.
See, that's what I mulled over and over and over again, and I decided that I just wasn't going to wait any longer. And, I picked up the Kindle, and I'm ultimately glad that I did. I'm enjoying it. It's a really nice device. It's easy to use. It's very easy to read. It's handy to have around. I couldn't be happier unless I had got it for, half the price.
I just wish they were cheaper.
I do enjoy my Nook. I know that.
All right, Alan, this is what you're going to do. Why don't you... What?
Just go get one,
Dan.
What, Joel?
Go get what?
Just go get one.
A Nook or a Kindle or a Meilong?
Hit the Best Buy. Go in your local Best Buy, and there's a Best Buy everywhere, so don't say you don't have one. Go to Best Buy, and they have the Kindle 3 and the Nook there. Check them out. Bet your money you come home with one.
I think I'd get in trouble if I came home with one.
Maybe or maybe not, Maybe
I'll
not.
Just hide
They have both down there.
There are some definite advantages to having a Nook or a Kindle. I mean, you can hide the fact that you have spent too much money on books a lot easier on a Nook or a Kindle than you can with paper books,
I can understand that. What were you asking? Do I have a what down here? Somebody was asking something.
I said, did they have both?
Oh, I thought you were asking.
The Kindle and the Nook at the...
Yes,
how much is the Kindle 3?
At the Best Buy. The Kindle was $140 and the Nook was $150.
Cool.
I wonder why when I go to Best Buy...
$149.99 kind of thing. That's for the Wi-Fi only one. That's the one that I got. Otherwise, it's $189.99 and $199.99 or something of that effect.
Yeah, they're only like a $10 difference between the Nook and the Kindle in both versions.
Yep.
I ended up buying the Wi-Fi version for me because I couldn't see any need to actually have a 3G version.
Yeah.
One of my Best Buy's website.
Yeah, I wasn't going to get that extra $50 worth of service out of getting the 3G either.
I wonder why the Amazon Kindle's not on their website. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
On Amazon's website?
On Best Buy's website.
Oh, okay. It's like they smack you across the face with it when you go to Amazon's website.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Can't avoid it.
You know, I noticed the problem. I noticed the problem this past week, there was an update in the Droid store for the Nook application, and ever since I updated it, it's been a little flaky. I'm not happy about that. What happens is when I click on it and I open up the bookshelf thing in there. Let me see. Actually, I'll do it right now. And it'll probably do it. It seems to happen consistently. It happened both on the tablet and on the my Android phone here, the mobile. When I click on it, you click on your library. It loads the library up, and it has a tendency to then crash. And I think what the problem is if you have any books in there that are capable of being downloaded, for some reason, it auto-starts the download or something, and then you get up an error that says, the application Nook has stopped unexpectedly. Please try again. You force close it. It's still open on the Nook. You click back in there again, and it'll do that like two or three times. Actually, when you open it back up again, it just loads and loads. Now, why I thought it was a syncing issue is because I had just found some free books on the Barnes & Noble store, and I threw them on my account, and I think it was like three books. When I pulled up the Nook app on the tablet, it crashed like that three times. And by the fourth time I went back in there, all those books were in there and available, so I think it has something to do with syncing, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm not happy with that. That kind of frosts my Pop-Tart.
Pop-Tart?
My Pop-Tart. Look, Alan, I don't need it from you.
And this would be good.
Mm-hmm.
I hear a lot of popping and dipping going on. Do you guys hear that, too?
Heard that. Hearing like a beer bottle before.
I don't know. Anyway, what else is going on, peoples?
Mint 10. Release candidate for Mint 10 is Purdy.
I'm thinking about trying out the Linux Mint version of Debian, the Debian one. You played around with that for a little bit, didn't you, Link?
I did. I didn't like it as much.
Not as polished?
Nope. Seems to work all right, but the differences between that and the regular version of Linux Mint are about the same as the differences between standard Debian and Ubuntu. It lacks a lot of polish. Not saying that, you know, it might be completely different by now, because it's like a rolling distribution, and they're working on it and doing stuff. But I still much prefer the regular old Linux Mint version. It's nice and works the way I like it to, you know. But don't let that stop you, you know.
Use what makes you happy.
Use find a Linux that you like and use it. That's what I say.
Yep.
Even if the whole reason that you want to use Linux is just to run the GCC screensaver, go for it. It's better than the alternative.
Nothing wrong with that. GCC screensaver makes people happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Some people, anyway. Not me.
Hey, you know, way back in the day, I used to think it was fun to spend my time compiling programs and doing things like that and tweaking little things here and there. And you know, to each his own, if that's what, you know.
But it's fun when you got time.
Do it up and enjoy
yeah.
it. Me, I, at this point in my Linux career, I much prefer having a running system and being able to do other things with it. But that's just me.
That's highly overrated, man. I don't need to run anything.
No.
I need to be compiling.
Sure. Or you know, alternatively, you could run the other operating system and just be rebooting all day long.
Yeah. Oh, waiting for it to boot up.
Yeah, but anyway, back to Linux Mint 10. I like it. It's,
why?
It starts up fast, which is nice. It has this, the thing that I'm not real sold on yet, okay, is the color scheme for Mint 10. It comes up with this gray background by default, and it has this brushed metal, like brushed metal theme kind of thing going on. And I really, at first, I was absolutely incensed about this because, let's face it, this is Linux Mint, and it should have a pleasant green background going on. It's Linux Mint, right? This is, you know, they're pushing a really radical change on me here with the gray thing. But after I stopped and looked at it a little while, the gray background kind of grew on me, and I'm all right with that. I do think that if you look in the alternative backgrounds, they have one just like the gray background, but it's green. In the middle of this gray background is the Linux Mint logo. Same thing with the green one. I think it would be much better if they left the gray background and they grabbed, you know, they switched the logo so that there was that green Mint logo in the middle of it. I think that would be cool. But, you know, no one's going to listen to me.
And I listen to you all the time.
Yeah, right. The guy who says, oh, what the hell have you been? When did you get a Kindle? He asked me today. Been on my blog for like a week. But yeah, you know, the gray background grew on me, and after a few minutes, you look at it, it looks nice. You can definitely use it. I still am not happy at all with that brushed metal theme they have going on. I have to change that. I changed that right away. I think that's ugly. It reminds me of my old, like, FVWM 95 days way back in, you know, 2001 or something like that. That's when that kind of stuff was good looking to me, and now I'm over it. So once I switched that, everything was happy, and I was good to go. The menus look a little bit different. Everything seems to work faster, which I really appreciate. You know, same as every other Mint distribution, everything is nice and clean looking and does what it's supposed to, and the high degree of polish that they put on the UI to make your experience that much better than it would be in any other distribution. So, you know, obviously, if you're running Linux, you really should give Linux Mint a try. I'm not sure what they have going on that's going to be different between the release candidate and the actual final release. But from what I was using on the release candidate, you know, it seemed perfectly stable and ready to go. So I would probably expect to see that rolling out anytime now. Do it. Do it now. Do it.
Do it.
You know,
Link says.
You know you want to. And sometime after the release comes out, like we have Clem coming on to talk to us next month, right? So that'll be even better yet. Then we can harass him about the brushed metal
yep.
theme.
Crap.
Right? Anyone? Anyone?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to say that there was a new release of Arch that was put out, but it's just a rolling release, so it's always new. Oh!
The bada bum.
I got new packages in Debian Fid today.
You got what?
Got new festival packages with Debian Fid today.
Oh, does that mean the voice is going to change again?
I don't think so. I think that's a separate issue. That's the voice codec. I can't pronounce it, but it's a funny codec thing that's not compatible. Wasn't compatible with the last release.
Oh, you know what I did want to mention? Sorry, Dave, I didn't want to cut you off, man.
Nah, it's okay.
Too late.
I'm done.
All right, if you're done. I had a couple of quick email exchanges with our fabulous friend Ricky Kite today. You guys all know who Ricky is?
Yep. Yes, I do.
Ricky, she has to do with magazines?
Linux
Pro.
Oh, yes. Ubuntu user and Linux Pro magazine. Right, right. She's the associate publisher, in fact.
Did she tell you to go to hell?
Yes, she did. She said, you know, you sons of bitches over there, we hate you. Never talk about us. Go to hell. And then she sent us some logos to put on our Friends of the Tech Show link stuff, and said that she was going to send us some stuff that we can give away, some magazines and shirts and stuff. So I would expect that stuff to be rolling in here, you know, sometime relatively soon. And then, you know, we'll have another contest for you guys. And
they're coming out with a new magazine, aren't they?
You know, I don't know. We really ought to get maybe Ricky on the show sometime and talk to her about that. She didn't mention
all the way
anything.
From Kansas.
No, she was just talking about Linux Pro Magazine and Ubuntu User. But I guess the I can't even find my link right now. But one of them, it just got past one of their anniversaries, so I think that one of the magazines is coming with a digital archive, their entire digital archive collection or something like that. So it'll be some pretty cool stuff. I'm excited to see it come, and it's probably long overdue that I put their information on our website as Friends of the Tech Show, because, you know, Ricky has always been really cool with us, so. And that's what I have to say about that.
What else do we have?
That's it. It's 10 o'clock, man.
I just posted, real quick before we go, I just posted a link to my review of the Terra HD netbook from ZA Reason. It's purdy.
It's dirty.
Purdy.
Why is it so
purdy.
Dirty, man? It's dirty. I looked at your pictures. It's dirty.
Oh, well.
Clean that crap up before you take pictures, man.
It's one of those dirt magnets, man. It's got that shiny black stuff on it. On the keyboard, anyway. No, and that's the funniest thing. You don't see any of that when you're looking at it. It's not until you take a picture of it. But
man, I saw that one. Did y'all pull that out of the freaking sandbox or something, man? What the hell?
I got a good camera. What can I say? Catches up the dust too.
Yeah, you take a picture with your camera, you can see the dirt on the keyboard. On my camera, you take a picture, you can hardly even see the damn keyboard, so.
Right.
Like, hey, is that a computer or what? Well, I'm not sure.
Yep. I still got
that. That looks nice. How much does that go for?
The one I have tests for, it goes for $587. That's with a 40 gig SSD drive and 2 gigs of RAM. A little expensive.
Well, you know what? If you're going to be pimping that, I have
pimp that new one.
I have the System 76 sent me a review unit. This is their, and I can't even remember what the hell this thing is called right now because it's in the other room. But it's their It's their ultralight version laptop. And it is, I don't want to ruin the eventual review I'm going to give to you, because I've really only been using it hard for a couple of days now, but it is glorious. Seriously. It's like it's a $600 laptop, thereabouts. Very, very thin. Very, very light. Very, very sleek. And if you can characterize a piece of hardware as being sexy, this is it. So stay tuned, of course, for the review of that particular laptop once I get a little bit better time to write my thoughts down. Yeah, let me see if I can hit their website real quick, and then I can at least tell you what the hell the name of it is. Laptops. Lemur Ultra Thin. That's what it is. That's the one. Price $699. 13.3-inch display. Wireless, HDMI, VGA, USB, headphone jack, yada, yada, yada. Standard stuff that you would expect, right? Running Ubuntu 1010. 3.4 pounds, and that's probably on the heavy side of the estimation of the weight. It really doesn't even feel that heavy, you know. It really is very, very light. Very sturdy, not at all flimsy like you would expect these little thin laptops to be. You expect them, you know, be able to hold one up in the air and shake it and have a weevil back and forth. Now this is very sturdy. It's really a nice laptop. But I'm going to stop talking about it because I'm going to end up saying the same damn thing when I actually do the review. It's your fault, Dan.
Yeah. What he said.
Damn.
Sorry.
That's also where I figured out that I hate Evolution as a male client, by the way, if you've heard me bitch about that.
It sucks.
I could have told you that 4 years ago.
There is absolutely no reason in the world why anybody would want to use Evolution as their mail client, as far as I'm concerned. It's horribly broken. Although I set it up quickly to read mail from my account. You know, this is just simple IMAP crap. Like, this is not... Like, I've done this 100 billion times. Set this thing up to read mail from my account. I read mail from the account. I sent my mail. I sent a reply email. I don't know if anybody ever got the reply. It didn't look like anybody got the reply. Like, it didn't look like the reply was sent. The mail wasn't copied into my sent folder. Not the mail I replied to was also gone. Figure that crap out. I just don't have time to track down really retarded problems like that in something as simple as a mail client. You know, when you set up Thunderbird, it takes you 20 seconds to set up Thunderbird. You set it up the exact same way. All of a sudden, my mail is delivered right. I can send mail. The sent mail is copied to the sent mail folder, you know, things like that. I just don't get it. Perhaps I'm, you know, being overly harsh towards the, I'm sure the fine folks who have worked on the Evolution mail client.
No, you're not. It sucked for years.
I just, I'm kind of with Joel on that one. I really don't like it.
I've never gotten into the use of it either. It's too bulky.
Yep. Yeah, why can't we get somebody somewhere who will develop a nice, good-looking, and good-working, thin mail client for Linux? Is there no way to do that? You know, like what?
Silkfeed is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, yeah. Silkfeed was the crap back in the day, but like it's never gone anywhere. You know what I mean? It's exactly the same as it was 10 years ago when I was using it. Like nothing has advanced or anything. UI hasn't changed at all. It hasn't.
Right.
Seen. It's exactly the same. Like if it were.
Link's cutting out.
Get rid of him.
I went and get rid of me, man. Time to go anyway, right?
But you were finishing up.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I was just saying that I've looked at it, and I've gone through a whole bunch of mail clients lately. And are you guys there?
Yeah,
I'm listening.
Hello?
Yeah, we hear you.
Oh, okay, you guys said that I was cutting out, and then all of a sudden I didn't hear anything anymore. So I've gone through a whole lot of mail clients lately just to see if, but, you know, it's been a long time since I looked at them, so I went through and configured a bunch of them, looked at them, and I'm still not impressed with any of them. I wish it were different, but I think, you know, Thunderbird is still, in my opinion, the best one, like a thick client that you can use on your system. And, you know, other than that, if you're going to go with webmail, you know, Gmail is the stuff. Send your hate mail to Joel. He told me to say it.
Yeah, whatever.
No, Joel uses MSN. I mean Hotmail.
Yeah.
Please.
You know what? Please. You know, one of notable mention, though, is I think it was Zimbra, right? Zimbra, I think, had a downloadable email client that you could use. It's like this giant suite, like Outlook. Kind of a suite, email suite, and it runs in, was it Java maybe or something like that? This was a couple months ago. Somebody helped me out. But I think that was the one. I downloaded that and tried that, and that actually was kind of neat. I thought it was a little bit on the slow side, but it was kind of neat. So that might bear some, you know, some time to look at it again. Anybody else look at that? Yes, no?
Zimbra, no. I did look at it.
No.
Apache, though.
That's not the same thing.
Zimbra offers open source email server software and shared something, something, something. Yes, it was Zimbra.
That's the exchange killer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to be. And this, when you download their... I'm pretty sure anyway. When you download their software, it's Zimbra Desktop. That's what it was. It's like an Exchange Desktop kind of thing. It's like a Java dealy, and it actually was pretty cool. It bears another look at some point in time.
And that works with any mail system?
Yeah. Yeah. Point it at whatever the hell you want.
Oh, my goodness. 93 megabyte download?
Yeah, it's a fat thing going on there, but it actually worked once I got it downloaded, and it was interesting to use. Like I said, I thought it was a little bit slow, but it was long ago, and I really can't comment a whole lot about that without... you know, redoing it and checking it out again.
You know what? I have said this before. And one of the problems I've had, and I don't understand why, but I've tried both Mutt and Silkfeed, using them on an IMAP server, and Thunderbird, absolutely no problem. But in both Silkfeed and Mutt, it gave me my entire home directory on my mail server.
Huh.
I think you get the same thing with pine or alpine too.
Yeah, that's the alpine, not mine. Alpine. I'm like, what? Why does it do that?
It's just the way it. Yeah, it's just the way that it reads your. That it reads your stuff. I mean, you know, in most instances, you would never know that because most people get mail off a mail server, and that's what the server does. It does mail, and that's it. So you don't have a lot of extra crap, you know, hanging out in that directory.
Mm-hmm.
So most people would never even notice that, I think. But, yeah, I have noticed that, too. I'm not sure exactly why that happens, but...
All right. Well,
I think
should I play this out?
Default directory something different, and it wouldn't be so apparent, though.
Please.
Yeah, we'll see. Oh, they're all sick and tired of your email client talk link.
Yeah.
How
yeah,
dare
yeah.
they?
They're telling me to shut the hell up.
You know what the problem is? They'd all be into it if it was an email client running on Android.
That's
whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Everybody. All right. Next week, who's our guest?
Jeff Porter. Jeff Porter, Cooking with Geek, Cooking for Geek.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a good
he's not
one.
Not sensitive anymore. He's really and for truly coming on next week?
Yes, he is. Just got an email
awesome.
From earlier this week. We're good to go on that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So come with your geeky cooking ideas and questions.
Oh, something I would like to throw out there to all our listeners. We really enjoy getting email. We do.
Yes, we do.
We love your email. What I would strongly encourage, if you're going to ask us a technical question, post it to the forum.
Please.
Yeah, post it to the forum. That way other people besides us can help out. Because I don't want to delay responses back to you guys. And more people, you'll have more eyes looking at your problem. I don't, you know, we'll still answer the questions to the best of our abilities. But you might get a wider range of responses if you post to our forum over there.
Might get them a lot faster, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't want to discourage people from emailing us. We love to hear your comments, your complaints, and all that, and your suggestions. But if you have a technical question, we strongly recommend you ask in the forum. And with that, I will play us out with just the regular show outro stuff. Unless Kent really wants to hear some Doba. Yeah, no, I won't play any Doba this week. Here we go. We'll see you all next week, gentlemen.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Nighty night.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, man, Fry.
Later.
And once again, I have to wonder... What the heck? Why is the audio not playing through here? Oh, to goodness.
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about Beowulf clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek for me.
Just talk geek for me.
Hey, it's DP. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek for me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
And that's
yeah,
it.
It's over.
That is
yes,
it
sir.
For this week, I think. You know what else we could say?
What can we say?
I want from you.
Hey, cool.
I want you to be the same. That is what you will do.
You Joel, did you get your Tomcat stuff taken care of this week?
The same technology news to everyone.
Not yet.
You will not help people. You will not give them tips.
That part is be a while before it's loaded.
You gotcha. Will conform.
A load is put
no,
on it again.
Join the revolution in Augast. Listen to the GNU World Order. For more info, go to www.thebadapples.info.
Or go find Patoot in a van dying by the river. Wish this stupid tablet would boot up.
Ugh. That sucks, man.
Yeah, well, we'll see what Joe says. He'll send me another one, probably.
Man. Well, I'm going to stop this recording because I got some post-production to do.
Yes, you do.
What?
Yes, you do.
Well, what? All right. Say bye, Joel.
Bye, Joel.
Hey, it's Pat.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm doing. I was going to do the show all by myself, but, you know, since you're here.
Okay. Who you doing?
The more the merrier.
I'll do you.
Wait a minute. You were talking with somebody, so what? You were talking with yourself?
I was talking with the fine folks on IRC.
How's it going?
Oh, the ones that say they hate you.
Yeah, that's the one. The ones that say they were there only to hear Gorkon. Yeah.
Oh, I already joined
exciting
that.
Exciting to know with you guys.
Well, if I tell you everything that's exciting and new with me, then we won't have anything to talk about on our show.
Okay.
I mean, the stuff that's not exciting is like, you know, I've discovered today that I probably need to shave again at some point in the near future.
Your legs?
No, my neck.
Your chest.
My neck.
Aren't you using that damn derby?
Shave the chest, man. Yeah, man. Yeah, I am. I just haven't, you know. The thing is, when you
I shave like every other day with that thing.
Dude, I shave like twice a week, maybe.
That's such a close shave.
Like every other day.
You probably have to shave like a man. I don't even have to shave like a man. I, you know, every 3-4 days, I can use that because I'm blonde. You know, like, and my beard is, well, it's kind of red tinged, but it's, you know, blonde on the inset when it starts growing, and you can't really tell. So I get that straight razor out, man, and shave that sucker down, and it's good. So you think it's a close shave too, Dan?
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! It's so close that it rips your face off if you're not careful.
Yeah, you quit chopping humps off your face and shit like that.
I usually I don't know how you do, but I usually replace the blade like every other shave.
I do it. You know what? I use my blade for 3, 4, 5 shaves until it starts pulling.
Uh-huh.
And the second I detect that it starts to pull a little bit, then I'll switch it. But you probably have, like, man hair on your face anyway, and like I said, I don't because I only have to shave every, you know.
Well, see, the thing that I worry about is if I let it get a little too on the dull side, I get too accustomed to it being a little dull, and then when I put on a new blade,
chop your damn cheeks off, right?
I shave off my face.
But, like, you would have to shave more often than I do anyway because you have dark hair.
And it becomes
visible quicker, right? So.
Yeah, and no, I don't think I would shave my own ass with a straight razor. That would be too scary. I have to
scary
sit.
Enough shaving your neck with it, you know?
Yeah. And I wouldn't shave my balls with it either. Hell no. Although, maybe, you know, I don't know. No. Could.
You're asking
but
for
no. It. Yeah, there's certain things you shouldn't do.
I'm right there with you, and I think shaving your balls is definitely one thing that you shouldn't do.
Even with an electric razor, I don't think I want to shave my
anything.
Balls.
Yeah, because it's that whole, you know, getting a sharp implement down there thing. I don't think I can handle that.
I'm fine with hair there.
It's like floss, you know.
Now, Link, if you wanted to come up and shave me, then I would agree to that. That would be okay.
I just nail one end to the windowsill and push you out to stretch it all out tight, you know?
That would hurt. That would hurt like hell.
I think you probably would, yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Tell me what.
I got something funky going on with routing here. It's either the routing or the internet cables. And I just bought... I got a nice little bead on cheap cables. From Monoprice.
You buy a box of cable and punch your own wire?
No. I need to get a punch down. I just ordered a bunch of cables, like 10-foot and 7-foot cables.
Ratcheting Telemaster, that's what you want.
Ratcheting Telemaster, is that a website?
No, that's the cable crimper you want.
Oh, how much is that?
$20-$30. Worth every penny. It's probably less now. I mean, this is like back in the day, you know? Get one of those. That's the last. It's the last cable crimper you ever need.
Network tools. Let's see what they have here. How much is it? Monoprice is pretty good. Now, cable jagged stripper, high quality network crimper. I don't want a crimper. Don't want a three-way.
Just
what's
look
it
up
called?
Ratchet Telemaster in Google.
Oh, they don't have it.
Even have them at Home Depot. $50 at Home Depot, but I'm sure you can get them cheaper.
$50.
Dude, I'm telling you, that's the shit right there. Where we got it? Amazon. They got them in Amazon. Amazon, $43.24.
Surprised they don't have them at mono price.
Cheaper yet. Yes, if you want the opinion of somebody who has spent a lot of hours crimping ends on cables, whether it be Cat 5 or Cat 3 or telephone cables or what have you, that is the one that I would get. That's the one that does not rip your hands in half after 15 minutes. A Ratcheting Telemaster.
And 1,000 foot of cable is like $65.
It's enough to last you a lifetime, man.
And all I want to do is go from my rack, my server to my switch here, which is like 3 feet. I'll spend $90 to buy all that.
Just go out and buy cable, yeah. But you know, there may come a day when
I agree with you.
serious cable, man, and that's the one to do.
When we used to have tons of cable laying around at work, I used to snag that stuff. Let's see, how much are audio...
Hello?
Yeah! Look
Dave
at you!
Yates?
What's
oh,
up,
my
y'all?
Goodness. Nothing. How you doing,
Nothing.
Mr. Dave Yates?
Doing great, Link. How you, Dan?
Alright, how you doing? Don't forget Pat. What's wrong with you, man?
How you doing, huh?
How's
how
Pat?
How you doing?
How you doing, Dave?
Good.
Here we go. Get a Cat 5, Cat 5, Cat 6, RJ45. There you go. $877 for 100 of them. Solid stranded.
You gotta have like a store down there, like a CompUSA or something like that, that you can go to and pick up shorter lengths than a box of cable. Probably for a lot of people, you know?
I haven't seen anything like a CompUSA.
How much cable you need, Dan? You need less than a box. How much you need?
I don't know. You can't have enough cable, can you?
Rabbit Ears says I have a bedroom.
I mean, right now, I'm not starving for any because I just bought a bunch of cables.
Why don't you come on over here, Rabbit Ears?
At home improvement stores like Lowe's and...
And sit
Home
down
Depot
next
sale.
To mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can go there. I just order it online, too, cheaper. I mean, you could probably get it in less than $500. But I'd be pretty good for cables. I just got... What did I order? I don't know. How many cables did I order?
Hello, everybody. Hello.
I just bought 10 cables. Yeah? Hey, how you doing, Colin?
Hey, not bad, not bad. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah, you can you turn yourself up just a little bit?
Yeah, maybe. Hold on.
If that's possible. Yeah, I got 5 10-foot pink cables, Dave Yates, and 5 7-foot green cables. I mean, all total it was $10.95 for those, and $6 shipping and handling. You could have probably gotten more. Huh?
You got green ones.
What?
So you got green ones?
Green and pink.
All right.
Integral.
The pretty colors.
Integral said I should get pink in celebration of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I don't have any pink cables. I don't have any green cables, so.
Yeah. You got it in just in time because Breast Cancer Awareness Month is up in a couple of days, right?
It is. It's a gift that keeps on giving, man. Network cables. Everybody should get. I think I'm going to give network cables to my kids for Christmas. Who wouldn't want that? What do you think, Colin?
A good cat.
Oh, I think kids would definitely like the pink network cables for sure.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello? Joel, turn yourself up. Already. Already you're killing us.
So,
Joel,
Colin,
what do you think?
It's really, really early or late, depending on how you look at it over there. Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from Edinburgh in Scotland. So it's
about awesome.
Coming up for 1:30 a.m. here.
Wow.
I didn't even, actually I wasn't sure where you were calling in from, so.
Testy.
Without hearing you speak more than two or three words at a time, I couldn't have been sure.
Exactly. You can't get the accent in a couple of words.
Good. Sweet. Deck show time. Almost. I got my tablet from Joe today.
Holy mackerel. Okay, turn it down.
See?
Somehow you just went like...
I told you should have just left it alone.
Outrageously. Wow.
I was being quiet at first. Didn't want to bother you having your good discussion. It was good.
He's into it.
Yes. Anyway, I got my tablet today. and go, how do you get it to turn on?
You press the menu button? Are you serious?
I did that. Yeah.
Coming from Joe, you said, or from Dell?
Joe.
And you can't turn it on?
Well,
maybe it needs to charge.
Did.
Maybe yeah. if you rub it really nice and talk dirty to it, that would turn it on a little, Joel. You know, stroke it softly, whisper to it a little
maybe
bit.
You're a nice Christian man.
You're
man.
So beautiful.
Just because you're Christian doesn't mean you don't know how the arts of love.
That's right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Christian people have the love too. I just want to say.
Yes, we do. I'll let it charge, see what happens.
Joel bricked his tablet already. I can't believe it.
Came bricked, maybe.
Dude. That's probably the tablet that my buddy got that he bricked.
Right.
And sent back for RMA, and they just sent it to you. You know.
Oh, guess what I got yesterday, what? Dan?
That was brand new. A phone?
Wait, let me guess. No. Is it a game?
Yeah.
Is it a game?
No.
VD?
No.
Oh. Is it another Sansa player?
Yeah.
you got that.
Sansa Dave.
You got a clip or a clip plus?
I got clip plus.
There you
we're
go,
gonna,
man. I'm telling you.
We're going to switch your name, Dave. Instead of Dave Sexy Yates, it's going to be Dave Sansa Yates now.
Yeah. Android Yates. How about that?
Here's something for you, Dave. Can you guess what I broke yesterday?
Your clip?
Your phone.
I broke the clip on my clip. No, I broke the clip on my clip.
Is it the clip plus?
The clip on your clip?
Yes.
I
broke the clip. But you know what I did? I pulled open my desk drawer at work. No, it just broke off. I don't know what happened. I pulled open my desk drawer at work. I pulled out one of the three that are in there, popped the case off, and put it on.
Hey, guys. Daniel.
Hey, how you doing, Dan? So having all those extra clips does come in handy.
Yeah, well, I've got
you
one clip
that
wants
Santa
E280 now.
Yeah.
I do.
Dan's part store.
Anybody
the only thing is, taking those things apart is
a
pain in the ass.
They just called Dan now.
I'll be back in a couple minutes,
but
guys.
I bet you're good at it
all
now,
over
though,
the floor
you?
Here.
All right. See you in a bit, Dan.
Okay, man, Fry.
All right, well, we got to start. Colin's got to get to bed.
No kidding.
Man's got a life. He doesn't need to be listening to us talk about breaking our equipment. All right. Oh, okay. Give me 1 second. I want to make sure that the audio levels are not going to blast us out of here.
No, here we go.
As usual.
Because I care. I do. I really do care.
We can fail.
It's important to me.
You're lying.
All right. Colin, what we're going to do is we're going to play our show intro, which is about a minute long, say hi, and then kick off the show, get right into it.
Okay.
We'll introduce you, and then you can speak your piece and then some.
Okay, dope.
Yeah, feel free to use any words, any language that you like. If you would prefer to speak Scottish, that's fine, too. Nobody will understand you except the people in the European nations, probably. Who can
right,
speak.
Because we know that everyone in Scotland, doesn't speak any English whatsoever, right? It's completely different.
Oh, absolutely,
different.
Yes. It's, very minority language over here.
What the
Alrighty,
hell
I'm back.
Is that? Oh, okay, that's you. Is Alan coming on tonight?
I didn't hear anything. Maybe he's late or something happened. No email.
Yeah, I can go for some I can go for some Korean barbecue right now. Oh.
Mm. Sounds good.
Some bulgogi.
How about some Beatty's, man?
Good place.
Maybe we should fix this up and, like, you know, send us some gift packages or something. A little Mongolian.
Made them enough money.
How's that sound?
Sounds like shit, but it's probably all right for everybody else.
It's not too loud, is it?
No.
If you don't like the cats, you can get up your ass. Is that okay? There we go. Alright.
B-L-M-T-S.
Alright, who wants to kick us off tonight? Because as soon as I start this off, I gotta run and grab my dinner.
Good, I'll take care of it, man.
Alright, you got it. Alright, I'll be right back. So here we go. Now, Colin, just so you know, I'm Dan.
Okay.
Why don't the rest of you introduce yourself so he knows who he's going to be talking to?
Okay, hi, Link.
Hi, I'm Pat.
Hi, I'm Pat.
I'm Joel.
Hello, Joel.
I'm Dave.
I'm the other Dan.
Dave.
68.
Okay, so you got Dan, Dave, Link, Joel, and Pat.
Cool.
And Colin.
Okay.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's a little bit of a show.
Whoops.